Once the gasps from the audience had died down, the briefer turned to the place where the craft had disappeared. In the blink of an eye, it reappeared, fully visible once again, hovering 6 feet off the floor. One Air Force officer who had come alone in his jeep had arrived late. Now he stumbled out of the briefing early. What he had just seen had shattered all the laws, the rules about physical matter upon which he had built his career. His face turned chalk white. His appearance frightened his driver, who asked him what was wrong. "I've seen nothing like it. Ever," he said. "I thought all that talk about flying saucers was something to laugh at."
"What?"
asked the driver. "On nothing. Never mind. Let's go." After the briefing, some of the Air Force officers wandered outside the hangar. They had seen the inside of saucer aircraft. They were getting ideas about the wingless, noiseless craft that maneuvered at fantastic speeds. After seeing some of the briefings, they were even more anxious to obtain the technology. They stared at the shining craft sitting back inside the hangar. "Seeing these craft makes us seem a little irrelevant out here, doesn't it?" mused one officer out loud. "Even with all the secret Air Force equipment that we have or are about ready to test, we don't have anything like what's sitting out on the tarmac in front of us."
"Yeah, we've got nothing like that," another agreed.
One of the senior officers pulled another officer aside. "You know, we could capture those craft, if we rushed them. I could gather up a strike force that could move in on them just like that."
"Oh, but sir, the president of our country is up in that other source aircraft. An action like that could put him in danger.
We can't do that. It's not as bad as all that. There's always another person standing in the background in Washington to take over as president. Look at it this way: if we captured those saucer aircraft along with the cigar-shaped craft, we could negotiate a trade-off, call it ransom if you want, for the president." He began pacing up and down.
"Yes, I'm going to do it. Those are fantastic aircraft and I want them."
The crews in the two cigar-shaped craft had been ever on the alert to such an eventuality. The Air Force personnel did not realize that their thoughts were being monitored telepathically. When the visiting Starfleet crew members heard this, the commander of the first cigar-shaped craft sent a telepathic message to Adros aloft in the spacecraft immediately. "We have a crew of hungry bears on the ground. They are starting to wake up." President Eisenhower and Adros overheard the plans of the officer to rush the craft on the ground as Adros replayed the video record of their conversation. President Eisenhower's mouth dropped open in shock. "Move the timeline back and we will return in the instant," said Adros' firm voice. Adros' tour of the galaxies for the president had actually been going on for several days. More than a week of Earth 2 had passed on board the saucer aircraft as they traveled beyond our own Milky Way. Their tour of the galaxies was beyond the ability of most Earthlings to comprehend. Now Adros was headed back to Earth again. "Be sure you locate our insertion point in time correctly," Adros said to the crew members both on his ship and on the ground.
"And we've got it, sir. I'm moving us back to the point which is 15 minutes before that conversation took place. I hope you will reconsider my request, Mr. President. I ask you to tell the people openly. I ask you to please discontinue all nuclear experiments and dismantle the bombs that you have, Mr. President. Then and only then will we share our technology with you," pressed Adros.
"No, it is not possible. We would be in too much danger," and President Eisenhower shook his head. "The other countries involved are just too much of an unknown quantity." The saucer aircraft was descending on the airfield. To the Air Force crew on the ground, it seemed that it had been gone less than 8 hours. The door to the saucer aircraft opened and a stairway was lowered for President Eisenhower and his two aides to descend. Adros stood at the top of the stairway. "We regret to hear of your decision, Mr. President. However, this is the last time that representatives from the Federation of Planets will come to Earth to make this offer. We wish you would reconsider and accept our terms, Mr. President. There must be no more nuclear weapons and you must make an open announcement about our presence around the Earth." Eisenhower stood at the foot of the stairway. "I am most grateful for the tour you have given us. It has been a real eye-opener,
but I cannot agree to either of those terms. We would very much like to have the technology, however." Adros looked very sad. "No, the release of our technology to you is not possible unless you agree to destroy all nuclear weapons. It would be far too dangerous. I am sorry beyond belief that you have decided not to agree to our requests. I state once again, we will not return to Earth for another meeting again." There was great sadness on Abmo's face as he turned away. The stairs were withdrawn into the saucer aircraft. The other saucer aircraft took off and disappeared in the blink of an eye, followed seconds later by the two large cigar-shaped craft. "Those are some birds, aren't they, Mr. President?" said the senior Air Force officer as he saluted him. "Right you are, Colonel, they certainly are." The President gave him a bug-hard look. A disembodied voice on the video continued, "Less than one mouth later, an atomic bomb that was 1,000 times more powerful than the one that incinerated Hiroshima was detonated on Bimini Atoll in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Its fallout even came down on an atoll some 100 miles away to the east. Cesium-137 was left in the soil of that atoll. Plants then absorb this radioactive material that would be eaten by the people there. This would make the atoll uninhabitable for decades. The awful beauty of the orange-red bloom of the nuclear explosion that demolished Bimini Atoll gradually faded as the three-dimensional video came to an end. Muroc Air Station has now become Edwards Air Force Base." In his farewell address on 17 January 1961, former U.S. President Dwight Eisenhower stated, "In the councils of government we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted." Adros was sitting there in the viewing room with me. He looked at me with eyes of great sadness. "We tried so hard then to stop humanity from destroying itself on your beautiful planet of Earth. Unfortunately, there were other star fleets who contacted humanity on Earth shortly after this time. They secretly proposed less noble exchanges in which some members of humanity would be exchanged for advanced technology. The residents of Earth will be sorry it accepted these agreements, but by the time they realize their mistake, they will have lost the ability to control the actions of these other star fleets." His eyes had a faraway look. "We have seen other planets at just such a stage of intellectual development that have plunged headlong into their own destruction by such a short-sighted approach. Ever since that time, we have never stopped trying to help the Earth. Perhaps, Katria, you can go back and tell some of the people on the Earth what we have not been able to make them understand." I heard a little voice inside my head. "Did you hear what he said? You have to tell the people of planet Earth." I shivered with the responsibility I have been given. But I also knew the price that our unawareness has already cost us on the Earth. I knew I had no choice but to take this information I had received from Adros and go public to all the residents of Earth. Chapter 16. Adros' lecture. Although I now felt that Di Mothership high above the Earth was a second home to me after my many nighttime visits, there were still a number of questions left unanswered. I felt that Adros, as the commander, was the only one who could answer them. Following a class that was shown in three-dimensional TV, I stopped by his conference room hoping to catch him between appointments. It worked, for Lai was headed outside. "Can you tell me, Commander Adros, how do I as an Earthling get apported from my bed down on Earth and instantaneously arrive intact physically up here on this great mothership?" I knew I sounded like an impetuous child. Adros stopped everything. "That is a good question, Katria, and it deserves a good answer." A smile blossomed across his face. "We are constantly sending information and material down to Earth and bringing it back again. Some of this information is in the form of energy and goes directly into the Earth. We are helping to stabilize your Earth, especially around the equator, as she moves through her necessary adjustments and deals with incoming energies. You prefer to call them Earth changes. We have teams working on this at all times. It's an important part of our mission. Your friend Jaimini is on one of these teams. But of course you are interested in how we bring people of Earth, like yourself, up here to the mothership. The directing intelligence for the process of dematerialization and rematerialization, by necessity, must come from our starship when people are being transported here from Earth. In that way, we here in the starship retain a certain amount of the control necessary for the process. Adros always spoke with great authority. I noticed that people began to stop and listen as Adros moved into an impromptu lecture. A wonderful smile spread over his face. There are quite accurate dramatizations of this process in your television show called Star Trek. The exact knowledge of how to dematerialize the physical body on Earth and rematerialize it here on board the starship is being withheld from residents of Earth at this time. It would be too dangerous for this knowledge to become commonly available. There would be those persons of low vibrations, of negative intent, who would try to take control of this type of information in order to control the peoples, the nations and the whole planet of Earth. I gulped and swallowed, knowing he was right. Not until our wars ceased on Earth and our jails ran empty could the people of Earth be trusted with this information. He looked at me intently, ever aware of my thoughts telepathically. Yes, Kartriya, we know that you could be trusted with this information because you personally would not misuse it. However, as I told you before, there would be certain people on Earth who, if they knew that you had this kind of knowledge at your command, would knock on your door in the middle of the night, and say come with me. They would try to threaten you, or imprison you, in order to try to get you to release this knowledge to them. Therefore, it is for your own protection that the exact mechanism of how the dematerialization and rematerialization is accomplished, is veiled from you at the present. When conditions on Earth are more conducive to it, the full knowledge will be made available to you. If you make a call to US, we will hear you and we will transport you up here if you feel that you need to be here in the physical body. An example is when you asked us to transport you up here in order to work on the detoxification of your legs. Since you requested it, we had your permission to beam you up here, as they say on Star Trek. You really should watch this program as there are many interesting things shown on it. We were able to work on you in the physical and our doctors were able to release a lot of metal toxins such as lead and aluminum where they had been locked in the muscles of your legs. You realized that it was easier for us to do this with you here in your physical body, rather than to have us try to concentrate a beam of energy from our starship through the atmosphere of Earth and focus it to you on your bed. However, we discovered that the detoxification we gave you was a little bit too intense for your physical body to deal within the third dimensional world of Earth. You had to endure leg pains and headaches until such time as your physical body was able to throw off the toxins that were broken loose. We know that in the future you are going to be more careful just how much energy you ask for and we are going to be more careful how much energy we beam through you even if you request it. I nodded for this had been a terrible to endure as I detoxified. I had felt ill for days on end. For the moment, it is enough to just experience the transport of your physical body up here. Observe the phenomena. The vibration, the buzzing throughout your muscle system and so on. One of the reasons that this process has been so easy for you Kartriya, is that you have had no fear. Fear must not be allowed while the process of dematerialization is going on because the emotion of fear crystallizes in your nerves and creates intense pain in the physical body. The pain can be so intense that the subconscious ever on the alert will take over and decide there is too much pain and it isn't worth it. The trip will then be aborted and the human being will end up back in their bed with a plop, sometimes with a headache as intense as that of a hangover. The crowd of people gathered to listen had grown to almost 100 by now. He turned to include them in the lecture. When it is necessary to transport a resident of Earth up here to the starship for medical or other reasons, they are usually not told of what is going to happen. This is to avoid instilling fear in them such that it might abort the whole mission. Then we wouldn't be able to bring them up for treatment of a disease that you on Earth might refer to as a terminal disease. But while they are here in our treatment facilities, we are able to adjust the vibrations in various levels of their aura and remove blockages of energy. Our doctors can go into the physical body to remove tumors or performing necessary repairs to vital organs. With our techniques of newly focused laser surgery, this can be done with a minimal amount of damage to the rest of the body. Then the patient is quietly and fearlessly returned to Earth and carefully cradled back in their own bed. We leave them with a vague memory of being in a great hospital, or they may think it is only a dream. The next time they have an appointment with their doctor on Earth, it is discovered that their disease has gone into remission. How amazing! Adrose leaned back and chuckled a bit. We sometimes watch from up here when this wonderful discovery is made and have a good laugh. It doesn't matter who gets the credit as long as the person regains good health. Then Lai turned serious again. It is quite important, and we hope will be a byproduct of their healing, that such a person will contemplate their healing and start to wonder, why me? What have I done to deserve this good fortune? We hope they will contemplate their beingness and consider that there must be something at work that is much more than the limitations they have been told that exist on three-dimensional Earth. We hope they will begin to look up toward the light of spirit and be thankful. We hope they will begin to raise their vibrations. We hope they will start to look for higher purposes in their life. If you stop to think about some of the people that you meet in your daily lives that are the stellar performers of humanity, you will often discover that they had an accident or life crisis at some point in their past. When asked about it, they will admit that it was actually a turning point in their lives. This is a spiritual truth, because the weakness they had encountered in their physical body would have meant the end of their usefulness on Earth during this lifetime. This would have been wasteful of all the good efforts they had made to become a spiritual being. Let me explain. At the time of an accident or infinity, their spirit had cried out in despair. There are sometimes those of us who hear and who can help them. After hearing their cry for help, their soul record is examined to see how many achievements they have accumulated on the soul level. This is part of the determination of whether they deserve to have a chance to continue their lifetime on Earth. Some of you will know this as examine the Akashic record. Not all of those who cry out are rescued, only the most deserving, those whom the Earth really needs. No, we are not God, we are only the instruments of God. By now there were even more people gathered. Apparently, it was unusual for Adrose to give such an open impromptu lecture, and the people of the Great Mothership felt it was a wonderful opportunity to hear him speak. If humanity could get the instructions which it was intended that the various religions on Earth could actually provide, it would not be nearly so necessary for us to intercede in the infirmities of humanity and physical reconstruction of battered bodies. Then humanity would be able to heal itself both in body and spirit. Kshatriya, you have heard the stories of the Hana healers of Hawaii who can heal a broken bone in less than an hour. They have retained the secrets of healing from times long past. Ancient healers knew these secrets as well. Many of your priests and ministers are doing a fine job of trying to help people understand how to heal their spirit. Some of them come up to our classes during sleep time to learn, though they may not remember it. Then they begin to trust their intuition. We help them give good counseling to those people who are in need of healing of the spirit, for there are many more people who need spiritual healing these days than ever before. We try to help these priests and ministers remove the fears that people have as well. There are others of these priests or ministers who are sincere but not so well informed. Their fear holds them back, their fear of censure, their fear of the unknown, or their fear for the precariousness of their position in their church. Some of them unfortunately are more aware of their position in society and want to preserve their ego more than they wish to serve. We are saddened by this and always hope they will revert back to being the true priests of God that they were intended to be. We provide them encouragement in whatever ways we can, but we never take over the choices in life that humans were given on Earth. We feel so sad when the priests who were entrusted with the carrying out of the purposes of God instead become caught up in the webs of greed and power. His face was a mirror of this sorrow. We support no particular religion. All religions on Earth were originally developed to fulfill the needs of the people at the place and the time that they were in their development. As the generations passed, and new priests appeared, the information often became subverted and sometimes even suppressed. This is what happened in your own Christian religion, in that the doctrine of reincarnation, or belief in past lives, was written out of official church doctrine in the 6th century after the life of Jesus, called the Christ. From the author, reincarnation was removed from official Christian church doctrine at a church council held in 533 AD. If you would like to research the common people's belief in reincarnation at the time of Jesus, read Matthew 11:2-15 and Mark 8:27-28. This brings us back to the reasons why we bring people here for physical repair. We can always hope that in the aftermath of their healing they will realize that there is a higher force at work. We here in the starships are only instruments of that great force. As you know quite well, Gutrie, we brought many of the casualties of the recent war with Iraq here to our hospital and performed repairs on them. These were men from both sides of the war. If the repairs to their bodies were such that they could be accomplished in a comparatively short period of time, then they were completed and the men were returned to Earth with only evanescent memory, a dream of being in a great hospital. Edrose smiled at me. This was the case where a young soldier from Kentucky was taken from his helicopter crash ill the Persian Gulf area and brought here. His injuries were healed much faster than they would have healed on Earth. After he was strong enough, he was placed behind the Iraqi lines since the war was coming to an end. He is only the curiosity of why he had so few injuries and bruises after the violent crash of his aircraft. Isn't it nice that you were able to identify what had happened just by reading about it later in your Kentucky newspaper? Hearing my unspoken question, Edrose nodded. Yes, it would be all right to let this be known now. I think I could handle the information now. This is quite enough of a lecture for today, Edrose said as he turned and addressed me personally. Gutrie, you will need to go to your computer as soon as possible to capture the memory of this lecture. It is important for the world to know all of it at this time. I will be there to remind you or dictate what you may have forgotten. It is time for you to return to Earth and to find yourself in your bed again. You alone will know what has really happened during your so-called sleep time. In the very next moment, the proverbial twinkling of an eye, I was back in my own bed and the light from my alarm clock set for 6 a.m. has just snapped on. I discover that I am fully rested, but I realize that something important has taken place. I write down a few reminder words on the tablet beside my bed to hold it all in memory. Within 2 days I am sitting at the computer. I am surprised at how easy it is to recapture the words of Edrose, commander of the Great Pleiadian Starship, the starship which stands on guard over planet Earth. What a privilege to know there are such great beings looking out over planet Earth. This experience took place on April 13, 1991, but at that time I did not feel free to share it with the world. I did not feel that there was the level of acceptance that I believe is present now. Therefore at this time, I am fulfilling the edict of Commander Edrose to Gutrie, an Earthling, that I carry his message to humanity of planet Earth. Chapter 17. Out in space I stood at the great viewing window of the mothership staring out into the blackness. Slowly on my left the huge blue ball came into view. It was filled with light, a beautiful blue light with swirls of white froth drifting across the face of it. It was the Earth, exactly as our Earth's astronauts had described it. This was my home. The white froth was actually the great weather systems that brought rain and snow to Earth. Sometimes the froth parted long enough for me to see the coastline of a landmass. Only moments before I had been lying on my bed on three-dimensional Earth. As I drifted out of my body in astral travel, I always concentrated on retaining the memory of my travels. I had made a number of friends among the Pleiadians on the mothership. There was J. Many, the technician and horticulturist, who bounced around with great energy. However, he was gone from the mothership much of the Toulon mysterious missions. Then there was the dark-haired woman I had first met in the control room. Her name was Behan Torslea and she had acted as Lily guide during my early visits. I couldn't pronounce her name very well, so I asked if I could just call her Behan. That seemed to suit her just fine. After I had become comfortable visiting the mothership then too, I loved going to the healing center and assisting the teams as they mended broken bodies from Earth. One of the new Igbeam came by the healing center and suggested that I come to see one of the places where she worked. Curiosity is my middle name, so I thought this was a great idea. I followed her down into the lowest level of the mothership. Bian opened tip a door to a large room that appeared to be a hangar. There were spacecraft in it, like what we would call flying saucers. Are these some of the UFOs that my fellow Earthlings are always reporting that they see? I asked. Sometimes, although, not always, because we can draw a cloak of invisibility over our craft and humanity may not even know we are there. She grinned. Sometimes it isn't even us at all. Sometimes it is a craft that is manufactured on Earth, that its maker and its owner want to keep as a secret, so they simply let it be called a UFO. It serves their purpose at that moment. Yes, I've heard about that. They like to keep the information real fuzzy about those craft, even pretend that such things aren't real. I shook my head as I looked at a variety of these craft, large, medium, and small. What do you do here, Bian? I'm one of the pilots. She smiled, seeing my surprise. Yes, we have as many women pilots as we do men pilots. That's because the mission of our mothership is not filled with the concept of war. The mothership is a peaceable place, so there isn't the danger, at least not as much as on Earth. We headed toward a medium-sized saucer, about 35 feet across. Sometimes when we are on survey missions down on Earth, the military in your country imagines that we are a threat to them. When they see us, they scramble up to where we are to take pot shots at us while we are observing the Earth. Then, of course, we find it is advisable to become invisible to them. She laughed. They think we have disappeared, but in most cases we have just changed dimensions. She motioned to the medium-sized craft that was sitting up on a tripod that was about 35 feet across. Here, come sit in this one with me. It looked safe enough and didn't look like it was going anywhere for right now, so I agreed. I followed Bian and we climbed up a ladder and through a small door in the bottom. It opened up to a circular room, actually a segment of a circle or a fan-shaped room. There was a wide circular-shaped console. Two seats were attached to the floor and were set about 45 degrees apart. She motioned me to a vacant seat here at the back while she took one of the seats in front of a small console with a few dials. There were wide viewing windows all around. A tall blonde pleasant-looking man sat in a similar seat on the other side of our circular room. Together we all made a triangle of seats. Pilot and co-pilot, I mused. Not exactly. Simon here is my teammate. Simon, meet Kartriir, resident of planet Earth. Northern hemisphere from somewhere in what is called North America. This is the craft that the two of us are assigned to fly together. He nodded to me and smiled at the introduction. She continued, with this particular craft, it is nearly impossible for us to fly it separately. It is necessary for a woman and a man to fly the craft. That is the way this craft has been designed. It requires a balance of both the female and the male energies. This makes for an increased efficiency in flight. When we hit high speeds, there is less vibration of the craft, because our female and male energies are balancing the flight. Does that mean you can guide this craft with your thoughts? I was incredulous. Yes, but this really shouldn't surprise you too much any longer. You have already seen how telepathy is so much a part of our lives here on the mothership. It is only a small step for our thoughts to become part of the controlling mechanism of our flying craft. Just think of how evenly balanced we can be and the craft as well. She turned back to her console and placed her outstretched hands on it. I was pondering this new concept of the mind becoming part of flight. I hadn't noticed that the great doors to the outer bay below us had opened. I heard a low whine. It barely sounded like a motor. Then there we were, out in space. It was the blackness of deep space because we were beyond the atmosphere of Earth. There were no dust molecules to disperse the light from the sun that makes the sky appear to be blue from Earth. This blackness was punctuated by the sun on one side and the great silver hulk of the mothership above us. There were pinpoints of stars in many colors all around us. It was beautiful. But I gripped the arms of my chair until my knuckles would have been white, if I had actually been in my third-dimensional body, However, our saucer aircraft was not alone. I could see out the windows that surrounded us that there were other craft outside the mothership with us. There were two smaller ships on the left and one on the right. They were near enough for the crew members to smile and wave at us.